is House File 270 by Representative Franke. So, Representative Franke, if you are here today, if you'd like to approach the testimony table and your witnesses.
Is he bringing treats?
Yes, thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Franke, I'm sure that you're well aware that freshmen who attend the Tax Committee for their first bill are not only asked but required to bring a treat for each member.
Mr. Chair, I have to apologize. I was not informed of that. I will say, though, that the treat that I have for you is the ability to help the veterans of Minnesota.
There you go.
That, how can I comment on that?
Yes.
Two treats. Well, I was going to say, yeah, ignorance is no excuse for the law, lack of law, right? But that's a good one. Representative Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, that tradition started many years ago when I chaired the Education Committee, and one morning I sort of jokingly said, it would be nice if people, if they had a bill up before the committee, brought treats. And then the word passed, and then it really developed legs, and then it spread to other committees and what have you. And Harry Mayers, who followed me in as chair from your caucus, he kept the tradition going. And he brought treats in one time. He was from either Green Bay or a city near Green Bay, and he literally had treats flowing in. Fresh baked goods from his hometown, because we also would take a vote at the end of the session as to whose district had the best bakery. And the old-fashioned donut shop in Crystal, that's the one I represented, always won. Nobody ever challenged the chair. But at any rate, it is a nice tradition.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Did you hear that, Representative Franke? Flowing in? Treat?
Flowing in.
You could have been walking them in. Anyway, it is a good tradition from time to time because of the daunting task that we are asked to do here at the Capitol. And sometimes it's nice to start out with such a good treat. With that, Representative Franke, I will have you introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair McDonald.
Mr. Chair, do we have a floor yet?
I don't believe so.
Oh, okay, I won't.
Close. You may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I bring before you today the House File 270. 270 is a bill that provides a non-refundable credit for individual income or corporate franchise tax for employers to receive a credit for the employers who hire disabled or unemployed veterans. The credit is equal to 10% of the wage paid to the veteran during the taxable year. This is a maximum credit amount that depends upon the status of the veteran. The maximum is $3,000 for a disabled veteran and $1,500 for an unemployed veteran. Employers may only claim one of the credits in this bill when hiring a disabled or an unemployed veteran. The credit cannot be claimed for currently or previous employed veterans. I'd like to say that part of my reasoning for bringing this bill forward, and I want to thank Chair Detmer for sharing this bill with me. It's been around for a couple of years, and when I was mayor of St. Paul Park, when we would do hiring, or when it comes to certain branches of the state government or federal government and other entities, there's veterans' preference that veterans are given for their service to our country. This bill would provide the ability for regular businesses to give a little bit of preference to those veterans in need. As I said, this bill was around and has been around for a couple of years, and it's had bipartisan support across the board. At one point, it had over 40 co-sponsors, and I took a look at it, and I think part of the reasoning was that previously this bill had included all post 9/11 veterans. So we took that language out, and we were able to, and I'm sure, I think it's in your packets, almost cut this in half, the liability to the state on this. And also in your packets, you should have a little packet that I prepared of what other states do for their veterans in offering tax credits to provide jobs. I won't go through them all, but some of them are similar, some are a lot more, and some are a lot less. But I think that what we're proposing today for the veterans of the state of Minnesota is right around average, but I always go to, if you look at New York City, they're higher a vet credit. I mean, that could be up to $15,000. And I think this is just a really good bill to provide help where it's needed by taking out the post-9/11 veterans and just getting it directly to the ones who need it, the disabled and the unemployed. So with that, I would like to introduce my testifier, Mr. Trent Dilks, and he'd like to say a few words.
Mr. Dilks, welcome to the committee. For the record, if you would state your name and your association.
I'm Trent Dilks. I'm the legislative director for the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota. And I also did not bring any treats.
Mr. Jokes, you being here is a treat enough for us.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to briefly share my story when I came back from... I'm a two-tour Iraq veteran, and my experience in attempting to join the workforce. I returned from my first tour overseas. I was 22 years old. I had done 16 months in combat, and I wasn't sure going back to college is what was for me. I had kind of outgrown that crowd. I went down to the local workforce center, and he promptly asked me, well, what did you do in the service? And he listed a couple of really useful jobs like carpenter, engineer, things like that. And I said, well, no, I was a machine gunner. He chuckled and proceeded to print off every list of $8 an hour factory jobs that were in the area and available. And that was the stack he had handed off to me. I promptly left and resisted the urge to teach him about chuckling at a recently separated machine gunner, but it turned out he was right. My job search and led me to a meatpacking plant, pretty close to minimum wage. From there, I did some commercial fishing and netting of fish, freshwater seining. And then my final stop was picking vegetables by hand. Not exactly built as a vegetable picker, crawling through the dirt wore on me pretty quickly, and as I was picking my eighth hour of cucumbers, I decided it was probably time to go back to college. The opportunities were not presenting themselves. I returned to school, promptly deployed again, interrupting my college one more time. Got back after another 10 months, so it was 26 months in the Middle East. Got back after another 10 months, returned to college. And then after I came out of college, I was 27, coming up on 28, and my resume couldn't compete with a 22-year-old. It just couldn't. I didn't have the time to dedicate to the internships, all the extra things that are required, and the struggle kind of continued from there. I was fortunate enough to find a position with a service organization, somebody who has it built into their core values to recognize the value a veteran can bring to a company. And once given that opportunity, I've been able to progress quickly and take on additional responsibilities and programs. The Disabled American Veterans supports the efforts of House File 270 to provide that opportunity. It's still up to the veteran to prove themselves once they get into that position to work their way upwards. But anything we can do, and that's the idea behind veterans' preference in the government, is to provide that opportunity to get that veteran in the door. For a disabled veteran who may be struggling with various things, the opportunity for an employer to see that incentive out there of bringing them on for $3,000 tax credit may offset some of the things that are lacking or they may not be able to interpret in their resume. We work hard with veterans to get them to translate their military skills, and we work hard with employers to understand that. But anything the legislator could do to provide a further opportunity would provide that foot in the door and that opportunity to pull themselves up so they can compete with their counterparts who have been able to dedicate their entire time to crafting a resume. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's my piece.
Thank you, Mr. Dilks, and thanks again for your service to our nation as well. And we have a question from Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it is for it is a question. Picking up on what you said about the ability to do the job, and is there? And I'll explain in a moment why I asked the question. But is there a retention problem ever as a result of the disability that they may have? In other words, once they're in the door. Maybe I'll explain what I mean by that. My father was a disabled American veteran from World War II, and he worked for the Great Northern Railroad, and I think just probably half the employees down there were vets from World War II. but Dad would be periodically hospitalized as a result of his disability in the late 40s and 50s. And the Great Northern Railroad was always a great employer, but he did have what I would describe as a high level of absenteeism as a result of being hospitalized, going out to the Veterans Hospital periodically. And they always took care of that, so to speak. He was never threatened with a job, and his boss would tell him that, don't worry about your job, we understand you'll be back. But I suspect there might be some employers that would be less than understanding of an employee that would be periodically, in that case, hospitalized. It was never a question when he was on the job about doing the job. It was sometimes he would be out at the vet's hospital, especially in the 40s, for several weeks.
Mr. Jennings.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Part of my job with the Disabled American Veterans has been to do claims and file for benefits and things like that. And any veteran who's in the system, one appointment at the VA will likely lead to six or seven, and they start to accrue some absences. The veterans that I have worked with that have been able to gain employment universally have found employers that are willing to understand that once it's explained to them. Part of it is getting across to our veterans. Let your employer in as far as knowing you're going for things related to your service. You know, the level of detail maybe doesn't have to be exactly what's going on, but almost universally the veterans that I've worked with personally have had good experiences with their employers. And then as far as the veterans, at a high percentage, I think they prove themselves to be the kind of employee you want to keep. And so you're willing to adjust for some of those demands. There's always a few in any group that maybe need to find different opportunities, but for a high percentage of the people who are drawn to the military, I believe further on in their careers on the civilian side, prove themselves to be the kind of employee you want to accommodate as you deal with those things. So I haven't seen a high amount of that in my experience.
And in the end, he was 40-some years with the railroad, but there was that difficult period after he was discharged, and but like I say, he had a good employer,
yep,
and good people to work with. But I was just curious if retention does become a problem if somebody were in like circumstances. But thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, members, we do have a quorum, so I'd like to officially call the meeting to order. I also would like to ask Representative Erickson if you would officially.
Mr. Chair, I will move House File 270, the first engrossment, to be before the committee.
Excellent. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't need to do that. Very good. And then Representative Schultz, would you be so kind to approve the minutes?
I move the minutes.
I'm on my old mayor talk, aren't I? All right. Any discussion or corrections or additions to the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
See, you do have to say that one. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Frankie, do you have any other testifiers?
No more testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Members, do you have any questions? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for bringing it to the committee. And like Representative Carlson's father, my father, World War II veteran, but we have to look back in those days. Our whole country was at war. I mean, everybody in the country had something to do with that war, and the same with World War I. But when you look at the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the wars that we're in right now, the war against terrorism, people can go on with their lives and not even think about what's going on with our men and women who are serving over in these other countries. In fact, as we speak right now, I have a son that's heading over to Afghanistan for his fourth deployment. And many times families are, you know, the home front is left to carry the burden and keeping things going. And the bill that we have before us, Mr. Delks, your story is very typical of what's going on. You go, you have one deployment, you come back, you look for a job, and then you decide, well, I better improve my education so that I can get a better job. You get pulled out again, go for another deployment. We have a young man in Forest Lake that has had 12 deployments.
Ooh.
12 deployments. And my sons have had 4 deployments now. So I think we need to look at whatever we can do as a state of Minnesota to, you know, back about 10 years ago, the unemployment rate was like 12% or more for our veterans. And we, as a state, we've done a pretty good job getting that down to 4 or 5%. And, but there's more things that we can do. So, and I think most veterans are not looking for a handout. They're just looking for maybe a helping hand to, you know, get them back on track. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That, and to you, too. You do great work for the veterans in Minnesota. So, thank you for the continued work. Representative Marquardt, you have a question?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Frankie, for bringing this forward. And by kind of focusing on veterans who are unemployed or disabled will also help veterans who are homeless. And there was a survey they do every couple years back in my area, Fargo-Moorhead area, and about 30%, I think is the number, of the homeless are veterans. Mm-hmm. And in the state of Minnesota, there should not be a single homeless veteran, especially when their homelessness is probably because of a disability they received while serving our country. And so so I'm glad this probably also addresses a little bit of that very important issue of veterans who are homeless also. So thank you again for bringing this forward.
Members, any other questions or comments from the audience? Any concerns, or would you like to address this particular bill? If not, Representative Frankie, you have the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, you stole part of my closing statement. You know, when I leave here every day, usually in midday, if I dare to make it out of here before dark, I see a lot of, and I'm sure you all do, see the people and the homeless standing out on the corners in this city, holding signs, homeless vet, help needed. And after getting this bill and working this bill, I think to myself that I'm trying, you know, other than a few cents or handouts, I'm trying to accomplish something to help you, and that gives me a good feeling. And I just want to also say that, you know, it's not only the ones like Mr. Dilks that did not have the right MOS to be moved up successfully into, you know, a job position right away, but I got an email here from a gal in my constituent of mine that her husband was United States Marine Corps for 30 years, two tours in Vietnam, and he had trouble getting a job when he got back until he was hired by the state. So a lot of these positions are open and given the preference, and that's where they end up. It's the places that don't offer the preference that where we could possibly give them help to get a foot in the door, because veterans have the work ethic to keep themselves once employed, once they're in the position. So I thank you for hearing me, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Representative, for bringing this very important bill to the committee. And with that, Representative Erickson renews her motion to lay over House File 270 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
All right, next we have Representative Hansen, on file 503, and we need a member to move that bill. Representative Loeffler?
Sure.
All right, Representative Loeffler moves House File 503. And with that, Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee, and welcome to your testifier, who has a very impressive resume, and I'm anxious to hear from him.
And I won't speak much, Mr. Chair, because I think he can do a good job showing the need for this. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House File 503 follows up on the work that Representative Detmer had done with military retirement and taxation. And Mr. Schneider here is a constituent who contacted me and said, well, I've done a different type of service. I worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, and would it be possible to do a similar type of thing? And so we had 503 drafted, and I worked with Ms. Manzi. And I, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment, because apparently with tax expenditures, we do, unlike many other things, we're supposed to have a purpose statement. So the bill, the A1 amendment, I guess, is needed to get the bill into proper form. And if someone could move that.
Sure, I'll move the amendment.
All right, Chair Carlson moves the A1 amendment. Is there any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, signed. Motion carries. To your bill, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to introduce Mr. Schneider, and you should have a copy of his resume and his professional experience. I will just do something that's not on his resume. He graduated from South St. Paul High School, class of 1958, as class valedictorian. So, and that started his effort. So,
Mr. That's Schneider, about 1,000 years ago, Mr. Welcome. Chair, if I've done my math correctly. First, I want to apologize. I fought a bout of flu-like bug over the weekend, but my laryngitis hasn't totally left. But not to worry. You all aren't going to get it because there's no fever left or anything. I feel pretty good being here.
Very good. Yeah, for the record, I'm sorry, Mr. Schneider.
My name is Philip Schneider, as Rick was saying. Born and raised in South St. Paul, went to University of Minnesota at one time and applied mathematics, thinking of becoming an actuary. I then changed the major to a double major, political science, which all of you are familiar with, and history. Still graduated in 4 years, and then served in the U.S. Army, where I studied Russian intensely out at Presidio Monterey in Monterey, California. 13 months of 12 hours a day of Russian. I passed through Minnesota after I graduated with the Russian. Sitting at my dinner table was my younger sister. She's number 10. I'm number 9 of 10 kids. I'm number 7 of 7 brothers. And when you're number 7 of 7 brothers, you never, ever, ever get your own way. So you learn other subterfuges to get back at your older siblings. And I passed through Minnesota. It was the week that JFK was assassinated. And from there I went to West Germany, then graduate school at Indiana University in the Islamic and East European Institute, specializing in Russian studies, of course. And then join the agency. I guess that's the right word, join. They join you, but you also join them, and you become a different person in many ways. Worked there for 28 years and retired, and that's already 1,000 years ago, 1994. And I still have good health. Must be the water I drank around the world, because I still survive. And I feel very honored to be here. And this whole thing started when I saw the brouhaha last tax year, when there was no, I thought, no tax bill at all passed, which wasn't totally accurate. But I saw something referring to the veterans, and I thought, well, they were getting some sort of deduction or credit on their federal, but also on the Minnesota state tax return. So I just picked up the phone, being naturally inquisitive, and talked to Rick's staff, and he followed up. This would be only a Minnesota deduction, because it has nothing to do with the federal government. They have their own laws, as you all know. And I says, well, let's see. I am a realist. Let me turn that around. I'm an optimist laced with a sufficient amount of realism to get up every morning and start the day over. And they did some follow-up, and I made a couple of phone calls. I did not realize that the law is already on the books for a credit of some sort. I don't know the details for veterans from their federal tax return. And I said, can we do the same thing with Minnesota? And I don't know the answer to that or where you all are going to fall on it. But I thought it would be worth a try. Many times at the federal level, when something is passed for the veterans, often they forget this small group of people out here. And I don't mean the political, this is the right hand, out there. And they forget that there is another group of people who are often involved. The so-called spear of the sword goes first. And hopefully the guys with the tanks don't have to follow at all. And that's really kind of the purpose of CIA. Keep it low level, keep it within reason so you don't have to use the combat forces. And I might add, everything you see on my resume there is unclassified. I worked most of those 28 years for the only component of CIA where the staff officers go overseas with no cover. Some people can't live with that. You have to, but that's it, because there are arrangements with the former government, with the resident politicians, governors, kings, you name it. They know who we are. We coordinate with them often. They know what we do. Everything is in the open. Everything produced by this organization, Foreign Broadcast Information Service, is unclassified. So they're trying to find officers who can go overseas, accept that responsibility, and there were once there were about 14 of these offices set overseas. I think I managed over my 20 years, particularly the last 12, who I was, it was nice to say, I was the honcho. I answered to the ambassador. My boss was in Washington. And I always thought, you still have to be accountable and responsible. Because the ambassador is right there over your head. And of course you have to realize the ambassador is not going to get involved in detail, but eventually gets back to you one way or another. Like I say, I served at approximately 10 of our bureaus overseas, and the last one was Moscow. They sent me into Moscow after the fall of the Soviet Union. I was the first agency officer into post-Soviet Russia without any cover. And from Moscow, KGB must have blown their mind. However, we collectively used some of the officers in the KGB to help set up our operations. Again, this is all unclassified work, done in the open, with the acknowledgement of the host government. That's why I say there's nothing in there that is secret. There's nothing that I can relate to that's secret, so I will watch what I have to say. But generally, I don't worry about it. I didn't worry about it for 28 years. And we survived. So,
thank you, Mr. Schneider. So, you would be considered the Mitch Rapp of Minnesota?
The what?
I'm sorry. Mitch Rapp is a fictional character, CIA agent by our own Minnesota Vince Flynn, the author.
Oh, yes. That's yes. He, yes. He, the author who's now deceased.
That is correct.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We're thinking of
it was just a little of. Something that popped in my head because I'm reading his latest novel now.
Which was written by a co-writer.
Yes.
You're correct.
Second one written by a co-writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Sorry to take that discussion off line there like that. Or Representative Hansen?
Mr. Chair, and you may have some questions about cost and what that does. And if you look at the form, it says, the fiscal note says unknown. And I do want to have Mr. Schneider talk a little bit just about the retired officers and how it would work, the form that he gets as the W-2 you get, how this would work, and potentially how many people are involved. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Mr. Schneider?
Yes, sir. All the tax documentation that is needed now comes to me via the Office of Personnel Management, OPM. I get my statement just like all of you. If you're former U.S. government employees, you get that statement. That gives you their gross, shows the taxes paid to the federal government. But I also have taxes taken out for Minnesota. I just tell them to take out $100 a month. That normally covers my tax bill at the end of the year when I do the taxes. The agency, a goodly number of years ago, made a coordinated effort with the Office of Personnel Management to protect all of those officers who are holding extremely sensitive positions overseas so that they would not be exposed to who was ever going after that information. And they worked out a lovely system. I'd be one of those that there was no concern about. I'm sure my administrative position behind the scene went through just like that. I've tried to find out how many retirees you live here in Minnesota, or at least this local zip codes, I guess was the easy way to find them. And the best of my knowledge, there's this one, and I don't know if there's two or three more, but seemingly you could count maybe five plus or minus in the whole state of Minnesota and western Wisconsin. I think that because of my inquisitiveness and curiosity, we are where we are today. And we'll see where the cookie crumbles.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Schneider. I suppose that would explain, obviously, the fiscal note of the department. It's unknown. Perhaps they could tell us, but then they'd have to kill us. Okay. With that, members, any questions? Chair Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we were talking about being in Moscow during the collapse of the Soviet Union. I have a former constituent that was there at the time, but she was working in the Foreign Service. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, one of the stories I've heard is that before we acknowledged that we were involved with Boris Yeltsin, she was in the apartment, his apartment, as a translator. But would those people, you know, at times have positions that would be at risk, much like a CIA person like yourself? I'm just trying to get a handle on whether or not there are others that might be able to come forward with a similar argument. You know, that was a pretty sensitive time, I assume, when she was meeting the ambassador and a very dangerous.
I think the way to look at it is there's a diplomatic list. If agency officers go overseas undercover, they make an arrangement with one of the bureaucracies that's present in Moscow. Most of the time, that's probably State Department. But there's another parallel list. I think that would be how it worked. You have a diplomatic passport, but you're not on the diplomatic list. Therefore, I had no protection because I was not undercover. I was there as a diplomat holding that diplomatic passport, but I was not on that special retirement list, occupation list. And therefore, I had no protection. If they wanted me to leave tomorrow morning, I have to leave tomorrow morning. It's that simple. Whereas at least that Foreign Service officer, full-fledged Foreign Service officer, is protected by being in a diplomatic list. He has diplomatic immunity. And that is very critical to our Foreign Service officers. I don't know if that completely answers your question or not.
I think it heads in that direction, Mr. Chairman. Had opportunities on more than one occasion to talk to her and her parents, and I know that she was in some pretty risky situations. I only mention that person because I assume that there are others that were in the Foreign Service that were also in various parts of the world, perhaps in risky situations as well, as somebody that would have been like yourself in the CIA. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and I think he adequately, at least for this point in time, answered the question.
If I just may add a comment, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
If I knew there were other agency officers in any of the missions that I worked at, I kept a barrier between us, not even socially, because I wanted to put them in danger. Everyone knew I was CIA. And if only the same people get together every Saturday night for a poker game, every night, or not every night, but every weekend, we're giving away the whole caboodle right then and there. Everyone there, and in Moscow particularly, Moscow was the most unbelievable place to work as an intelligence officer because every other man and woman on the street was working for the KGB. Every time you left the embassy, you had 100 people following you. You would take the deep, the mile-long, beautiful Moscow metro system. If you stand on the top and you stand on the bottom and there was about 200 people between you and the top and the bottom, you can rest assured maybe 75 of them are in front of you and another 75 of the KGB representatives are behind you. You could not, to use the expression, even pee in your bathroom without noting it in someone's book. It was an unbelievable place to work. And of course the end result was some of our most influential, and this is me speaking, I'm nothing official, when Ames, the traitor from Wisconsin, mm-hmm. It is alleged that his personal work, not out of ideology, simply and purely greed. And his wife, who was from Latin America, her desire for more and more things. But seven or eight, or up to a dozen, very top-level Soviet agents working for CIA evidently were just shot, thanks to all the regimes. It's a tough business.
Yeah. Mr. Schneider, this is better than any book. I think we should get together sometime in the evening over a pint or a cup of coffee and further discuss this. So with that, Representative Devine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank both the testifier and Representative Hansen for bringing up the issue of those who serve us. Taking nothing away from those who serve our country in uniform, there's a whole bunch of other folks who serve our country in a suit and tie, or a nice dress and heels, I guess. My brother is one of those, so you may actually have crossed paths in Moscow at that time, because he was U.S. State Department and stationed there right in the time period at the end of the Soviet Union and the beginning of the Russian Federation. He's got a great story of the attempted coup. That members may recall, the American State Department employees lived in a compound together, and my brother had a car. And in the middle of the night, as the Soviet forces were attempting to retake power and tanks were advancing on the Russian White House.
Or LA Dome.
I'll defer to you. The Democratic forces were taking cars, were stealing cars off the street to create a barricade. And the word suddenly went out in the American compound, if you parked outside tonight, go get your car before it ends up as part of a barricade. But you raise the issue of those who served and those who served in dangerous situations without having the luxury of carrying a weapon and being able to defend themselves. So he served there. He served as the chargé d'affaires at the U.S. Embassy in Tajikistan, which I would challenge many of you to find on a map. But when he would go to the countryside on embassy business, it was a three-car convoy with a security car in front with the guns sticking out the window so everybody knew not to mess with him. The car my brother was in, and then the car behind with the security detail with their cars sticking out the window so that nobody messed with them, knew not to mess with them. And 6 months after his tour there ended, they closed the U.S. Embassy for security reasons. He later served at the U.S. Embassy in Iraq when getting from the airport to the embassy involved an armored personnel carrier, a flak jacket, and a helmet, and an interesting flight path in and out of the airport. So my point being that these people face dangers. There's many in the agency as well as in the State Department who have died in the service of their country. And the question before us then is, if these folks serve our country overseas, face danger, do an honorable job, do they not then deserve the same tax benefit and respect that we provide appropriately our veterans? So thank you for raising these issues.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Good point. Mr. Schneider.
One fine detail. On the first Iraqi war, in January, the Desert Shield, and then the ground war, and then the final. On February 27th, 1991, President Bush ordered the ceasefire. February 27th is my birthday, and he did it because it was my birthday, I said.
I think we should recess and reconvene tonight. So, well, anyone that thinks the tax committee is boring can eat crow, because it certainly is not, that's for sure. Members, any other questions? Representative Detmer and then Chair Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and then just a maybe not so much a question, but I've worked with, in my work, my job was to tell pilots don't fly in that area. Okay, I worked in the MI world, and also my son, who's now in Afghanistan, and I could never tell my wife or my family where I was going to be located and so forth, and I worked in a SCIF, which you know what that is. And we worked with the intel from CIA, NSA, ASA. I remember one time we were trying to find a certain radar that the Iraqis were using. And I got some intel in, and we were in a joint operation with the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and the British. We were working with the British in the SCIF, which is a secure facility. And the Brit comes up to me and says, can I read that intel you just got? I said, no, it's titled No Foreign. I can't allow you to read it. But I can tell you where I got it. Where'd you get it? From the British intel. And that's just a good story. But I remember I told Representative Hansen that what we've been able to do now for our veterans that have retired and drawn a pension now, it took us 17 years to get that piece of legislation through. 17 years. I worked on it 10 years. I hope it doesn't take that long. But thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing it forward.
Anyone else from the audience would like to speak on behalf of the bill? Oh, Chair Carlson, excuse me, before you come down, Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, on the bill, I was just going to ask Representative Hansen a question or the testifier. It says Central Intelligence Agency. You know, and when you're reading a bill like this, you begin to think about circumstances or people. And I have an acquaintance married to a friend of mine, or he's now deceased, but she was with one of the predecessors of the CIA during World War II. So today she would be up in years. But it appears that the bill wouldn't cover somebody from that generation that would have been part of the intelligence agencies prior to Harry Truman, President Truman signing the legislation creating the CIA, which I understand was a merger of many of those other intelligence agencies, and that would have been late 1940s. So you'd still have
1947.
Yeah, so you'd have some people from that World War II era that would have been probably doing similar work that we're describing with the CIA that wouldn't be covered with the bill. I just point that out. I don't know if Representative Hansen has a comment or you do on that particular issue, and I don't know if it would be a big issue or not, but there would be people of that generation.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hansen,
Representative Carlson, I would think, and maybe staff could provide, that it would appear that a simple or the precursors language or something like that could be a...
Someone's phone is ringing in their attaché case.
CIA watching.
That's right. Mr. Michael. During this beautiful music, can you speak over it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think that, I mean, we can look into this, but I think it's likely that the OSS was around for such a short period of time that anybody who was an employee there would have become an agency employee and would have retired from the agency rather than deriving a pension from OSS service, yep, would be my guess. Yep. But we'll research that and, yep, and find out.
Mr. Chair, we think
Representative Hansen.
Happy to defer to staff and the research on to make it accurate.
Excellent. Anyone from the audience wishes to speak on behalf of this bill? Members, any more questions? Mr. Schneider, thank you for your service to our nation and sharing with us your stories. Everyone stood up, sat up, and listened intently for the most part.
And just think, I did it all without breaking any security laws.
That we know of. Very good. Well, Representative Hansen, you have the final word. And
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would ask for your consideration in this. I know you'll be laying it over, but I think it's a good bill, and thank you for the opportunity to present it. And if you have any questions, I'm sure we'll be around for a little bit.
You're very welcome. And with that, Representative Loeffler renews her motion that House File 503 be laid over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you. Mr. Schneider, thank you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Next
we have Representative Hansen, or excuse me, Representative Peterson's House File 735. Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee. If you have any testifiers, they can come down at this time.
Well, she said her roommate.
And I believe this is Representative Peterson's first time here in front of the tax committee. No? She's a giver anyway. Look at that. What Chair Davis missed a great week to be gone.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Davis.
You know, I don't know how your caucus works with your freshmen, but in our caucus we sometimes have a kind of formal mentor-mentee relationship with freshmen, and might I suggest that if your caucus doesn't have that, that you adopt that and have Representative Peterson mentor Representative Frankie, because I think she nailed it here. And
Representative...
I'll stop there.
That is an excellent suggestion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
These are homemade.
Yes. Homemade who? Well, with that, Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee, and Representative Draskowski moves House File 735. And with that, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I will definitely get on those freshmen because I know how important it is, especially as we kind of have little time to eat food moving forward as we go through the legislative process here. The bill you have before you is House File 735, and you may recall the very emotional testimony that we had last year that relates to the stillbirth credit. And we're very happy that we were able to pass that into law last session. However, once we tried to implement the practice of it, there needed to be some clarification work done, and that's simply what this bill does. It clarifies the eligibility for the stillbirth credit, and this is co-authored by Senator Best in the Senate, and she is moving that process forward on the other side. The stillborn credit what this does is it clarifies that the person that's taking the credit are the birth parents on the birth certificate. And I also do have some testimony from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Peterson, and for the treat as well. I'm not sure these would be Representative Davis' favorite treat, but they're very good and healthy.
Yes.
So with that in mind, Mr. Cummings, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, I wanted to thank Representative Peterson for bringing this bill forward. This provides important clarifications for Minnesota families. After the stillbirth credit was passed into law in the supplemental budget bill last year, we really looked at the language. When this happens in a family's life, I think the most difficult thing that could happen is to there be confusion about how to prepare tax filings or what type of credit is appropriate in those areas. And the credit as passed, there was some clarity that could be added to ensure that families knew exactly how to apply for this credit and who applied for this credit. So I wanted to thank Representative Peterson for bringing this forward. I also want to thank Ms. Manzi, Mr. Michael, Jacob Smith, an attorney from the Department of Revenue, and Ms. Pollack from Senate Counsel for really working together with Representative Peterson and Senator Rest to try and provide clarity in this area that both provides clarity for the department and our customers, as well as worked with the legislative intent of Representative Peterson and Senator Rest. So with that, Mr. Chair, as this bill moves forward, we want to continue to be a resource to you and the committee in seeing how we can be helpful.
Mr. Cummings, thank you to you and your department for your dedication to a very sensitive issue for people and recognizing that and addressing that. Thank you. Representative Metzer, welcome to the committee. Do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. This is a good bill. I remember signing on to it last year after hearing the very compelling testimony from your testifiers. And, you know, I did have a question for revenue. Do we have similar credit for people who have, unfortunately, have sudden infant death syndrome?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I don't believe that we do. We certainly don't have a credit specifically for sudden infant death syndrome. I'm not sure if those expenses would be qualify under other credits or deductions, I think the best thing to do would be to ask Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi. So I will defer to them.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Mr. Michael or Manzi?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metz, the rationale for this credit was that under the Internal Revenue Code and Minnesota's following of it, someone who has a stillbirth is entitled to no dependency exemption for that child because the child was never alive, never born alive. Someone who has a child who dies of sudden infant death syndrome would not be in a similar situation because they would have the dependency exemption. And so that was the sort of the rationale for the credit. You could hypothesize, I guess, that they have other expenses or something like that. But the proponents of the bill basically felt it was inappropriate that they did not get at least 1 year of dependency exemption, which would not be true of a SIDS death.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. And Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, I think that I understand the rationale there, but would love to work on an initiative like that. And so we can talk about it more at a different time, not relevant to this specifically in the way it's formatted. But I did have a constituent this year whose family went through that experience and set them back for work, both parents, and very devastating. I'm sure we've all heard those stories and think it's something that we could address here at the legislature when appropriate.
Very good. Members, any questions? Anyone from the audience would you like to testify? With that, Representative, you have the final word for your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Drozdowski renews his motion for House File 735 to lay over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thanks for the treats.
Oh, and thank you for the treats. Those were very good. I could use another cup of coffee, though, with those. This season. Okay, next we have Representative Anderson with another great bill, House File 615. I would presume she'll move her own bill when she reaches the table. And she has some great folks that will testify on behalf of her awesome bill, so they can come down and be prepared as well. And with that, no reason to welcome to the committee, because
you can always do that.
Well, with great honor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move House File 615 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And what this basically does, you guys are familiar with this issue, it allows, it has Minnesota conform to the federal Section 179 allowances. We haven't done that since, I think, 2005 was the last time that we conformed. And what this means for small businesses is it gives them a tax incentive to help them grow their businesses here in the state of Minnesota. And it's a big tool that's used by small businesses in other states that already conform. I think that there's a total of, I want to say that there's a total of 46 states that already conform to the federal level, and we'd like to add Minnesota to that list. But I do have a testifier with me today, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to turn it over to him so he can explain the impact that it has on his small business.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And for the record, would you state your name and your association with your rep?
Paul Hewitt, Hewitt Manufacturing.
Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, committee, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to testify on House File 615 and on the 179 allowance. Hewitt Manufacturing is a third-generation company, 91 years in business. My grandfather started it. We're located in the Midway area of St. Paul, about 3 miles west of here on University Avenue. We ship product nationally and internationally, and we also have competition throughout the country and throughout the world. And to compete with that, we have to buy the state-of-the-art equipment. We have to buy equipment that allows us to make our product and become very competitive, obviously, with the world market. And currently, with the $25,000 Minnesota 179 allowance, it just doesn't make a dent. Most of our equipment starts at about $200,000, and we invest a little bit more than that every year. And so it's really important for a small company like ours, 36 employees, that we can invest and get a return on that equipment. Part of the return would be it'd be very helpful to be able to take a Minnesota allowance and reinvest in more equipment and grow our company, grow our employees. As you can imagine, with this new advanced equipment, we have to continually retrain our employees and hire more advanced employees to do the work. So it's a good business. We've been here, like I say, for 91 years. We'd like to be competitive with the rest of the country and the world, and this would help us. So I appreciate you looking at this bill.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Hewitt. Representative Anderson, you have a few other testifiers? Or is there any questions for Mr. Hewitt? If not, that I see Ms. Kadoon coming down from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Ms. Kadoon. And for the record, you know what to do, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Beth Kadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. About 80% of our membership has 100 employees or less, so a lot of our business members would be impacted by Section 179. I've testified earlier on this bill regarding the early federal conformity bill that you passed and our concern that we were not fully conforming to the Section 179 provisions. As you know, these are targeted at small business and farmers. It has been made permanent at the federal level. The majority of other states, my understanding, are in conformity with the federal code on this. Minnesota is not at this point. So we're certainly in strong support and thank Representative Anderson for bringing this forward. It truly is about how you can provide and help encourage investment in Minnesota operations. And we think this bill does do that. It reduces the cost of capital. And so it's certainly important as we're trying to set policy that encourages investment and growth in the private sector. This is one way to get at this. I would also mention when you're looking at the fiscal note or the revenue impact, that it is timing. Obviously, a dollar is worth more to a business now than it would be in 5 years on the depreciation. And when you look at the revenue estimate on the second page, it does mention that in the tails that it's about $6 million in the out years. So it usually works very well when you're putting together tax bills because you usually have a bigger tails issue. Section 179 obviously has more costs in the first few years and then less in the following. So we hope you can support this as you're putting together your final omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kadoon. I have a question for maybe you, Ms. Kadoon, or the author, Representative Anderson. There are a lot of home businesses, and just as I read and interpret the Department of Revenue's analysis, would this a home business qualify for the business property that they'd be able to expense in that when they place that business in service?
Mr. Chair. Okay. Mr. Chair, I do believe so, but Mr. Michael can confirm.
Mr. Michael, did you hear my question? That's right. So as I'm just reading the analysis here, would a home business qualify as a business property under this bill or even to conform with the federal?
When you say a home business, it, for example, if you have a business that you're operating out of your home and you buy a computer equipment or something like that for that, yes, you could. In general, it does not apply to real estate improvements, so you could not, if you're thinking about, building an addition onto your home where you would conduct business out of it, no, that would not qualify because it's not equipment. So this is largely, machinery and equipment and vehicles qualify those. So if you're buying a vehicle for your business, that would qualify.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Say, for example, you were buying photography equipment that was over the $200,000 mark. Yes,
and that would be. Yeah, as I reread it with my cheaters on, I thought I read property tax as well on that, so I was incorrect. Someone over here have a question? Or a correction? You wanted to correct the chair? Brunhagen? All right, thank you. We have another Mr. Nick Sinner from the Minnesota South Dakota Equipment Dealers Association show. Mr. Sinner, welcome to the committee. And for the record, state your name and who you're with.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Nick Sinner, and I'm serving as the president CEO of the Minnesota South Dakota Equipment Dealers Association. We represent about 250 equipment dealers, outdoor car equipment dealers, industrial equipment dealers across this two-state region. And I'm here to speak in support of House File 615. For us, Section 179 is a tool that our customers make use of as they work towards a regular, orderly, predictable program for upgrading their equipment. This type of program creates an incentive for our customers to move towards newer, more efficient, and more eco-friendly equipment. These purchases create revenue for our members, and that maintains jobs. Section 179 reduces the cost of capital for our customers, which makes it easier to attain the proper rate of return for their farming operations. Secondly, by putting this legislation in place, it would help level the playing field my members must deal with here in Minnesota. Right now, our dealers are at a competitive disadvantage with our neighbors. We're surrounded by states that already are in conformity with the federal Section 179 tax laws: Wisconsin, North Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, Illinois, Michigan, Missouri, and other states here in the Midwest already are in conformity. And finally, I support putting this legislation into effect now. Section 179 has been available on a national level for several years, but until last year it was on a year-by-year basis. So for many years, the equipment dealers would be in Washington pushing for another extension for Section 179, but usually it wasn't approved until the last few days of the year. This small window of time did not give many would-be customers enough time to plan and evaluate the needs of their farm and its equipment needs. So this delay in implementing these incentives undercut the very purpose of the provisions and greatly hampered its intended impact. By making this legislation permanent, it would add the stability to the process and help Minnesotans make informed business decisions. I want to thank you for your time, and I will try to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Sinner. I believe we have a question from Representative Kosnick. Welcome to the committee. You have a question for the witness?
No, thank you, Chair.
Okay. Sorry, I have that written down. And members, do you have a question for our testifier, Mr. Sinner? All right. Very good. Thank you for your testimony. I believe we have Mr. Hickey in the background that will also address this great tax bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm coming off the bench today and want to thank Senator Anderson for bringing another important bill forward, the second one, and I was up here with you just a few weeks ago. But Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, and this is, for us, this is right up there with the state tax conformity. It's just another huge thing we're out of conformity on. And that would help the small businesses and the farmers of this state so much if we could conform on these two important things. But as you know, our limit is way below. I've heard a lot of complaints over the years about the add back, a real annoyance, and this would be a great thing to finally accomplish. And so I hope you make it a priority this year as you put together the big bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. I often remind my wife when I need a new camera, which is a small expense compared to a new combine or a huge piece of equipment, that I could have been a farmer and had a $200,000 combine to purchase. So with that, I always get my new cameras. Any other questions from members, from the audience? Anyone from the audience would like to testify on behalf of this bill? Well, Representative Anderson, you continue to bring great bills forward that really help foster a good economic business here with small business and farmers, so thank you. And I see Mark Court, I can see, I'm a photographer, I have wide-angle vision. So I just wanted to get that out. Thank you for the good bills that you put forward to help our economy. And with that, Representative Mark Court has a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It's good you've got a wide angle there. This is a good bill, and actually there's been Democratic and Republican tax chairs who have supported this and tried to get this to work, and like Mr. Sinner said, it does create an unequal playing field between a lot of farmers, small businesses with other states that surround us. And like Ms. Cadoon said, it's a lot of upfront costs, which a lot of times when you're putting a bill together, you've got one-time money, so to speak, and then smaller tails, which is always more beneficial. I'm wondering if if we can't do it all, excuse me, if there's a way to even go with a three-year phase-in rather than a five-year phase-in, it, I mean, just depending on what the count is going to be. So I don't know, Mr. Michael, if that's been suggested or not, but if, you know, if we can't do this all, which would be nice to do if we could do it over three-year phase-in versus five. So,
Mr. Michael?
Is that, I mean, is that...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, I don't ever recall anyone proposing that, but there certainly would be no technical reason why you couldn't do that, and it would reduce the, you know, the current year revenue cost of doing this.
Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Michael, and thank you for bringing this forward, and hopefully we can get as much done on this as possible. Thank you.
Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt. I'm guessing that this probably impacts your area more than most because you are on a border, and so your dealerships probably experience this quite a bit and the challenges that they have in competing with North Dakota and South Dakota. Members, this is a common sense bill. I know it comes down to the numbers. If we can find a creative way maybe to resolve kind of the number challenge, I think that would be helpful for us. But I ask you to really consider this because it means a lot to our small businesses in the state of Minnesota. So I just encourage your support ongoing. So.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Anderson. With that, she renews her motion for House File 615 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And with that, members, we almost are adjourned. Just remember, good government all the time.